This is Scott Verguen of KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We are going to be talking about Cuba and related issues. We're with Beth Poteet. She's a regional organizer of Witness for Peace Northwest. Good afternoon, Beth.
Hi there.
Took me a while to figure out what time of day it was. The reason I called you, there was an action alert that came out on a specific issue in the House and Senate. We'll get to that in due time, but I think I'd like to start with, perhaps you could share with folks that are listening, what Witness for Peace is and what you're about.
Sure. Well, we're an international organization that works for peace and justice and human rights in the Americas. And we started in Nicaragua in 1983, taking delegations from the U.S. to see what was happening during the war there. And so the idea kind of behind Witness for Peace is to stand in solidarity with our sisters and brothers in Latin America and really take the cue from them in how they want us to interact with our own government and change the policies that the U.S. government has been imposing on Latin America for the last several decades. So that's basically who Witness for Peace is in general. So we have staff members in Nicaragua, in Colombia, and in Mexico, and we did have folks in Cuba who had been working there, but unfortunately, and we'll probably get to this, their license was not renewed for educational purposes, so that office was closed earlier this spring.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's just go with that. Was that closed in our country or in Cuba?
In Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what happened last year in Congress was that they, and it was this year as well, they passed a provision limiting licenses to Cuba. Basically, in order to travel to Cuba, you have to apply, if you want to go legally, you have to apply for a license from the U.S. government, and that's issued through the Treasury Department.
Mm-hmm.
And so there had been licenses for educational travel to Cuba. The provision has now changed, and so you have, in order to get an educational license, you have to be an accredited educational institution, and the program has to be 10 weeks in length or longer. So anyone who was going on a week or 2 week delegation to Cuba through a group like Witness for Peace, that license basically was shut down through our government. So U.S. citizens could not travel to Cuba under that old kind of provision.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the office was closed. And there were a couple of other things that happened. Also, the U.S. government restricted Cuban Americans' ability to travel back to Cuba to visit their family members, and it continued to maintain the travel provision in the embargo, which states that you have to have these licenses, you have to apply to these licenses in order to travel to Cuba legally. So, you know, there are other communist countries like China and Vietnam that U.S. citizens can travel to freely. They don't need to apply for a license. Cuba is the only country where this particular kind of license situation is set up that restricts basically U.S. citizens' rights to travel throughout the world.
So it loosened up for a while, didn't it? Didn't the travel restrictions loosen up for a while? I'm not sure where that began, how many years that actually lasted, but that was my understanding anyway, that it was easier for a while.
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Are you thinking a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I guess it's been a while. But
yeah, I don't know the specific history in the last couple of decades. I just know more recent history, probably mm-hmm. since about the year 2000, what's happened.
Okay. Well, I do know that, of course, a little bit of history. It's amazing that it was, I believe, if I remember right, 1959 when the Cuban Revolution
right.
happened. This has been going on so long, and I do remember that for a while there, the only way a U.S. citizen could go to Cuba would you kind of have to sneak. You'd go through Canada, I suppose,
right.
or Mexico.
Right.
And I guess it's kind of gotten back to that in a way.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. So, Cuba. I mean, right now that's one that I'm particularly interested in, but of course all those, I mean, the history of Nicaragua and what's going on in Colombia and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very dynamic time right now. What do you think, I mean, what is it about Cuba? What is it about Cuba that that embargoes lasted for, what, over 40 years?
Right. Well, I wish I had the exact answer to that question. I mean, I have kind of my own personal opinion, which is based on working on changing U.S. policy towards Cuba, but I also was able to travel to Cuba in February of 2003. I think part of what's gone on is a failure or a lack of willingness to look at this policy in a new way, and sometimes I feel like it's just business as usual, and people don't necessarily want to see and really examine the effects of the embargo. It's a failed policy. It's been in effect for 40 years, and the intent behind it was to change the Cuban government, basically, to a non-communist state. That hasn't happened. So I think folks just really have failed to recognize that it's a failed policy and that it's really hurting the Cuban people. And that's who it's affecting. It's not affecting the Cuban government necessarily. I think part of also what's happened is there are a couple of very strong voices in Congress who are Cuban-American that really have kind of pushed this hardline agenda of keeping the embargo in place and restricting travel and other types of interaction between the U.S. and Cuba. I think also we have to keep in mind that the governor of Florida is Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush is the brother of our president. So all those kinds of things work together. You know, Miami-Dade County, which is where a lot of Cuban-Americans live, and a lot of these specific Congress people are kind of from that area, you know, they have a lot of political power. And so all those kinds of things, you know, work together. I think also there's just a lot of misinformation about Cuba. There's a lot of myths that have been propagated over decades that people have grown up with. And actually, if you look at polls that have been taken over the past couple of years, the majority of the American people want the embargo to end. They want the travel ban to end. And Congress, accordingly, has voted in the last couple of years, not this year, but in the last couple of years, has voted to end the travel ban to Cuba. And what has happened is when the bill has gone to conference committee, the Cuba travel provisions have always been stripped out by Republican leadership. So it's really this kind of undemocratic process of this is what the American people want, this is how their Congress people vote, and then when it comes down to it, those provisions get stripped out in the final bill language. So it's actually kind of this outrageous, undemocratic process that's going on that very few people really know about.
Right, and that's what this particular action alert from Latin American Working Group is about. It's a little bit of a, in my mind anyway, a little bit of a complicated issue in terms of payments for food that's shipped to Cuba and that, but basically, if I understand right, both houses of the U.S. representatives and the Senate voted for this provision to allow... see, maybe you're going to have to explain it for me, but to allow... Cuba to continue to pay cash as opposed to pay before they receive goods or something like that.
Right.
And they're threatening, the Republican leadership is again threatening to remove, even though both houses agreed to it, to remove it in a conference committee.
Exactly. So basically what happened was the Treasury Department, again, who kind of oversees all of our interaction with Cuba, they put out this new provision that said that Cuba had to pay in cash in advance for any agricultural or food products from the U.S. So that's a change in the provision of how Cuba could pay for buying food from the U.S. So basically, you're right. The House and the Senate both said, yes, we want to get rid of this new provision. We don't want to put that much restriction on Cuba because then it will basically inhibit their ability to buy food from the U.S. They can't do it if they have to pay in cash in advance. So both houses said, we don't want this. What President Bush has threatened to do is veto the entire appropriations bill, which is $140 billion bill, if that Cuba, if the Cuba language is left in. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
So yes.
He's saying he wants to keep this cash advance provision on the books, and what the House and Senate are saying is they want to take it off. And he's saying, if you leave it in there, then I'm going to veto the entire appropriation bill.
Mm-hmm.
So they're feeling threatened, basically. I mean, kind of forced to take that language out.
And it looks likely that this will happen as early as Monday.
Monday, right. Mm-hmm. There'll be a vote probably in the conference committee on Monday.
And also, it looks like Senator Patty Murray of Washington State is one of the key people in this.
Right.
Do you know if she's key because she's leaning one way or the other? Or
she's key because she's one of the ranking members on the Appropriations Committee mm-hmm. in the Senate. So, and she generally has always supported loosening restrictions on Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also, Washington, just like Oregon, you know, they're very agricultural,
right.
you know, states, and so they want to be able to sell agricultural goods to Cuba. So, but because Patty Murray is one of the two ranking people on the Appropriations Committee that is convening this deliberation process over the bill, we're asking folks to really contact her office just to encourage her and support her in keeping this Cuba language in the final bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I've got the number right in front of me here, so why don't I give that, and we can at least have that for folks. It's Patty Murray's office in D.C. It's 202-224-2621.
Great.
All right, and all right. Well, you say you've been to Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
I have an interesting question. I mean, yes, Oregon, Washington, agricultural. I know down in this part of Oregon, the Willamette Valley, there's a lot of interest in organic foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I have heard that Cuba is really kind of a leader in developing organic agriculture. And not to put you on the spot, I know we didn't ask you about this up front before we started this conversation, but I wondered if what you know about that.
Yeah, I don't actually know very much about it other than to say I think that is part, it has a couple of reasons. One is just that, you know, the Cuban people realize that organic and sustainable agriculture is just how we all have to start thinking. You know, we all have to really move in that direction. I think the other reason is a very practical one. Because of the embargo, they can't always get, they couldn't always get the kind of pesticides and fertilizers that are readily available to farmers in the U.S. because of the embargo. So they had to think creatively and went towards organic and more sustainable agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's probably not famous enough in enough circles right now, but also this stuff with... it's another one of the bits of information that came out with Hurricane Katrina is... Cuban people and government's ability to respond to hurricanes that are approaching their island,
right.
and how well they did in a similar situation.
Right.
At least the strength of the storm.
Right.
I mean, it's astonishing actually how the contrast of
mm-hmm.
moving people away, having them taken care of, not just putting them in stadiums, and nobody died.
Right.
And it's the contrast again is it's
right.
very stark. So, what are you? What is Witness for Peace? You say you were in Colombia,
mm-hmm.
Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and
Nicaragua.
And Nicaragua. Okay. Can you tell me about some of the specific programs that you know people that are in an office? If I were to hook up with Witness for Peace and go to Nicaragua, what would I most likely get involved with?
Right. Actually, I just returned from leading a delegation to Nicaragua.
Oh, very about good.
A week ago. Yeah. So I can give you a good answer, hopefully.
Yeah.
Most of what our focus in Nicaragua and Mexico is pretty similar. It's really focused on trade policy from the U.S. towards those countries. So specifically, this delegation, we actually focused a lot on food security and the effects of the Central America Free Trade Agreement
mm-hmm.
that has now been passed, I believe, by all of the countries involved in that, and how that really will affect small farmers in Nicaragua. Similar kind of issue is relevant in Mexico with NAFTA being passed, you know, 11 years ago, and the effects of that neoliberal kind of economic policy on Mexican farmers and laborers. So a lot of what we do is education about just that kind of that free trade policy, the impacts of that on local communities, also how the International Monetary Fund and World Bank affect countries who are also highly indebted to these larger financial institutions like Nicaragua, the imposition of genetically modified organisms, GMOs, into the agricultural livelihoods of the farmers in Mexico and Central America. And then in Colombia, a lot of our work is focused on ending U.S. military aid to Colombia and also, again, opposing free trade policies. The next kind of free trade policy to come to Latin America will be the Andean Free Trade Agreement, which will probably come up in Congress next year, and that will include that Andean region. So Venezuela, I don't know if Venezuela will be part of it, but Colombia and Ecuador, Peru, the kind of that Andean region, you know, modeled on the same kind of idea that we, you know, go towards where the cheapest labor is, kind of this race to the bottom idea of how to create an economic policy, which is really, what we saw in Nicaragua was really inherently flawed and only continues to this cycle of poverty in these developing countries. So that's kind of what Witness for Peace is doing right now in those specific places.
Nicaragua, aren't they close to an election?
They are. There will be a presidential election next November, and actually Witness for Peace is starting to organize folks to come down as election observers for that. They're hoping to get 100 people to come down to Nicaragua and be part of that. And they're particularly concerned because the U.S. has been in, basically has intervened in the kind of the election process in the past. And in the last elections, Jeb Bush took out a full-page ad in the Daily Nicaraguan paper supporting the Liberal Party candidate. And so there's kind of a fear again of intervention by the U.S. in this next election, and that it will not be truly free in that way. And just to, and, you know, specifically on Nicaragua, to remember history, you know, the U.S. basically funded the Contra War during the 80s, and so when threats are made towards Nicaragua about, you know, how they should run their internal politics from U.S. politicians, they take those threats seriously. So, because they saw the effect of what happened when they voted for someone and they supported the Sandinistas who were not supported by the U.S. government at that time. So they very much feel the threat of any displeasure from the U.S.
So the current government, the leadership of the current government, is it pro-U.S. or is it certainly more pro-U.S. than the Sandinistas?
They definitely have closer ties to the U.S. It's the Liberal Party, and the current president, his name is Enrique Bolaños. He definitely has close ties to the U.S.
And I believe, it's obvious that the Bush administration has been amping up at least the rhetoric, and you have to wonder what else is happening. But are the Sandinistas kind of resurgent right now? Is that, or is this, or is that just, am I falling into believing the rhetoric that's coming out?
I'm not really sure. We didn't spend a lot of time learning kind of about what's happening currently in their political structure. I believe that Daniel Ortega will run again for president, and it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens. There may be a third-party candidate that comes on the ticket. Folks were talking about that, and that may shake things up, too. So it'll just kind of be interesting to see who runs and how the people end up voting.
So when is this election, do you know?
I believe it's in November of next year.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So it's a year away.
Yeah.
All right, well, a lot obviously can happen between now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I am remembering reading horrible, horrifying stories about the days of the Contras and the Cuban connection, that Cuba, as it does now in other countries, sent teachers, lots of teachers and lots of doctors and that the Contras
mm-hmm.
were targeting Cuban teachers and assassinating them. And yeah, anyway. It's a very complicated, and obviously we said things are changing so drastically. It
mm-hmm.
seems like in some quarters with Hugo Chavez and Venezuela, I would think that gives lots of people some hope if he can just figure out how to hang on.
Right.
Of course, it helps to have a lot of oil, a lot of money to do that. But so what's next for you as the Northwest coordinator for Witness for Peace?
Right. Well, something that's immediately coming up
mm-hmm.
is the annual vigil at the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. I'll be attending that. And that's basically, it's a U.S. Army training institution
mm-hmm.
that has trained Latin American military officers for several years. And graduates of the school have been involved in basically every major human rights abuse in Latin America in the last 40 or 50 years. So the school, the name has changed, but the courses are still basically the same,
mm-hmm.
and we'll be having a presence with Witness for Peace, as we always do, at that event, and that's coming up actually next weekend.
Oh, that's next weekend
mm-hmm.
already?
Oh, yeah, it's in Fort Benning, Georgia, in Columbus, Georgia. And if people want to know more about it, the website is www.soaw.org. That's School of the Americas Watch.org. And then, basically, we always have delegations that are going to Mexico, Nicaragua, and Colombia, and we encourage people to participate in those delegations.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to our website, which is www.witnessforpeace.org,
mm-hmm.
and look up the delegation schedule and get hooked into one of those delegations. And then we always do a speakers tour, and that will probably be next fall.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring someone up from one of our partnering organizations in Latin America and host them on a speakers tour throughout the Northwest. So we will be doing that probably again next fall.
Okay. Well, that sounds, you're keeping busy. There's plenty to stay focused on, isn't there?
Definitely.
And you mentioned School of Americas, and I think that if you take President Bush at his word, or what he says out front and what he said recently, apparently he's the only person probably in the world who thinks that the U.S. doesn't engage in torture anymore.
Right.
And that, of course, School of America, like you said, is one of the places where some of these techniques apparently have been taught.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I really appreciate your time, and I know that, there's so many issues to be focused on, but Cuba and, boy, certainly Nicaragua, I don't know, maybe if it's possible, Nicaragua seems to be even farther below the radar than Cuba right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As it came up in this summit that happened down in Brazil with the FTAA,
uh-huh.
I believe it is, the free trade thing and all that, this is you just have to step across the border and either, to the south, and it's people are much, much more aware of this than in most people in the United States.
Exactly.
So I appreciate your time in helping us to understand this some, and hopefully we'll get some people listening to this and get people to go to your website, which again is witnessforpeace.org.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
And Beth, maybe I've got your cell phone. If you take it with you, maybe I'll give you a call down at School of America so we can talk while the action's going on.
That would be great.
You're not planning on getting arrested, are you?
I'm not planning on it.
But you never know, do you?
You never know.
Yes.
This is true.
Either the spirit moves you or the arm of the law grabs you, whichever comes first.
You got it.
Okay, well, have a good rest of the weekend,
thank you
again for spending time.
Thank you.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We were talking with Beth Poteet of Witness for Peace. For more information on Witness for Peace, go to their website at www.witnessforpeace.org. Also, that
phone number for Senator Patty Murray of Washington State, an important person in the issues discussed here in terms of Cuba. Her Washington, D.C. phone number again is 202-224-2621. This is Scott Berguin of KSOWLP in Cottage Grove. Thank you for listening.